H-O-P-E. Hope. Suppose we looked at the H as the word hell. O as the word opposite. P as the word progress. And E as the word excellency. Do we have a hope chest? Within our chest, do we have an unrelenting drive to be in alignment with the one and only God, which is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love? God is the great I am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, and eternal, principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love. The word good is defined as God, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, omniaction. What is left out? God is everything. Spirit is substance. God is spirit. That means the only substance that exists is flawless, transparent, totally reflective. Soul, another term for God, means sense. Spiritual sense, because spirit is the only substance. So all seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling, which is the way we identify everything, is based on a spiritual foundation, since spirit is the only substance. And principle is structure and system, always in balance, always harmonious. So our whole foundation is as solid as an impenetrable fortress. Because that fortress is made of spirit, and nothing has power that can penetrate, break up, dilute, deflect. Otherwise, interfere with spirit as the only substance. Life is living the qualities of God. Truth is what keeps us on track to make sure that we are not deviating away from being in total alignment with God. And love is nurturing every single quality of God so that we can realize, recognize, claim, and live the perfect wholeness, completeness of love. So what really is hope? Hope is based on an unequivocal spiritual understanding that gives us confidence that is solid, can't be penetrated, it's everlasting. Always in our thought as our model. Because nothing can overpower omnipotence. The good we do and embody is the only power obtainable. we can reflect as much power as we want to do in good deeds. Jesus gave us two commandments. Love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. And love your neighbor as yourself. They are so tightly woven together that he made it all in one answer when he was asked by the Pharisees, what is the greatest commandment? The greatest commandment is both loving God and loving man, which is really all together, because there's only one God. So that means we all have the same father, mother. And it's permanent. Nothing can interfere with it. Nothing can dilute it or deflect it, stop it, reverse it. That's our parent. And with that parent, we don't need any other parent. And we don't have any other parent. For we are spiritual, because spirit is the only substance. So either we're spiritual or we don't exist. I would choose the option that we're spiritual. We want to exist because we want to do good things to express the power of God. We want to reflect the power of God out into the universe of thought. We want to be a beacon, like a lighthouse, and let our light shine. We want to always be nurturing all of the qualities of God and let that light shine. How is the best way to let our light shine? Love is required for any success, because love is cultivating all of the qualities that are real. It's cultivating the intelligence and wisdom and knowing of mind. It's cultivating the capacity, the capability, the functionality of mind. It's cultivating the creative intelligence of mind. It's cultivating the omni-action of mind. And therefore, it is producing performance that has no limit. If we utilize those qualities when we are practicing living, then everything we do in our life is going to be a success. If we let love be the atmosphere of everything we do. And what is love again? It is cultivating all of the qualities of God. We cannot be successful in anything unless we are loving. Loving is giving. Giving of ourself, everything you can think of. Do we have any skill, any talent, anyone we know of that could benefit from the wisdom and the skill and the talent we have if we shared it with them? The education system is in shambles. Do we know how to teach what we know about anything? Can we teach young people? Can we teach anyone that is receptive to learning something? Can we offer them a cup of cold water in the name of the Christ consciousness? Can we help a homeless person? Can we help anyone that is begging for assistance, we must realize that they wouldn't be begging unless they could not see their way clear to do anything different. We have to just make sure we are intelligent when we're giving. How about asking the individual why he is begging? He says, I don't have any money. I'm hungry. Did you ever think about asking him why he doesn't have any money? Why he is hungry? How did he get in this situation? What is his background, his education? What is he interested in doing in life? You might be able to help him get back on track. You may be able to give him a leg up. You might be at the top of the mountain and he is one step away from slipping down the cliff. But with your hand held out and grasping his or his wrist or his arm firmly to give him support to come on up, that might be all he needs, is just a little bit of advantage to be able to get up to where he can see a better daylight, a better opportunity. We must always think about how we can help other people solve their problem if they are looking to us for assistance. We all have talents doing something. Are we unhappy with the school system? Maybe we can be on the school board. Make a difference. Make suggestions. Are we unhappy with the way the city is operating? Maybe we could be on the city council. Maybe we could attend a council meeting. Give them suggestions. Find out what their biggest problem is. Maybe we have a skill or a talent that would help them go in the right direction. The same at other levels, the state level, the regional level. Is there a sports team at your school and they're not doing so well? Do you have any experience in whatever sport it is? Could you be of any assistance, being a volunteer assistant to the assistant to the assistant coach? How about going to a game and rooting for them to be successful in their endeavor? Being successful is not winning, and lack of success is not losing. Winning and losing depend on whether or not the rules, the principle, is being followed. There is no such thing as competition between brethren. We're all one. The only competition we should have, or anyone should have, is competing with a standard that has been established, that they're convinced is a good standard, and having the discipline to stick to the principle that enables them to be within the structure that is building toward a perfect performance. Hardly anyone ever needs money. You can't eat it. Probably wouldn't be very comfortable to sleep on it. You can't drive it as a vehicle. How can you use money? Oh, to buy or rent something. Well, what is that something? That's what the lack is, not money. You can't do anything with money by itself. So you're lacking something. What is it you're lacking? Are you sure that's the best thing for you to have? You might be looking for a solution to a problem, and you don't even know all the alternatives because you're not omni-knowing. And you're probably not omni-intelligent. You may not be omni-anything. In fact, I can guarantee you aren't. Because God is the only omni. That means one, only, and all. Today is October 29. In 7 days, America is going to make a final selection for many different offices, and one of the most important one is the President of the United States, along with the Vice President, and that includes a whole team of people that have already been selected and eager to get started in their function. So November 5 is going to be a day that that decision is scheduled to be made. Are we ready for it? What do we need to do to be prepared? We need to do the same thing we should be doing every day to prepare for our day's activity. Mary Baker Eddy says we never want to go to bed without settling our accounts. She says a quote that Isaiah gave to the world, precept upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line, here a little, there a little. Einstein tells us that we should learn a little more each day about the holy. He tells us that curiosity has its own reason for existing. We should never stop questioning. Mary Baker Eddy tells us that the one thing more than all else that points to either success or failure is how we use our moments. Moment being defined as the smallest measurement of time. Shakespeare says, "There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." Jesus said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free." Putting these all together, do we know what truth is? Do we know what we want to be free from? We want to be free from any limitation. Believing in matter or mortal mind or both is a real big limitation. It makes no sense at all. God is infinite. Why should we be limited? Because we are supposed to be reflecting God. We should not have any more limitation than God does. All we have to do is get self-ego out of the way. If nothing is good or bad except thinking makes it so, what should our thinking be? About limitation or about the infinite? About God or the devil? About success or failure? The quote about the truth shall make you free and nothing either good or bad, those are two of three quotes at the beginning of Science and Health. And it's certainly easy to understand that Mary Beth Reddy thinks we ought to keep that at the beginning of our thought every time we open the book. Because that's really our guide to what Christian Science is all about. The third quote is by Mary Baker Eddy, and it says, "Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. That is thy high behest. Thou here and everywhere." The Bible says we should pray without ceasing. The only way I can figure out how to do that is to be living our prayer. Every breath we take. There's a song about that. Every breath you take. Every breath we take should be a breath of living a prayer of wholesome alignment with God's qualities in everything we think, say, and do. Jesus said if we think something, that's the same as doing it. If we think good, that is building up a good consciousness. If we think evil, that is tearing down a good consciousness. Maybe robbing someone of a great activity. The beauty about spiritual understanding is that hope is not left to chance. It's not a gamble. It's a sure bet. It's like the salesman who has a certain procedure that he follows in bringing about a sale. He has to first know what kind of prospect he needs to have that could benefit from what he has to offer. And he has to figure out how he can make contact with those kinds of people. And then he makes contact with them. He explains the product and how it could help them. That's after he's done research on who they are and how they can benefit from what he has to offer. And then he shows them that benefit. They may very well need to think about it, maybe research things, maybe get a competitive price if there's another company offering a similar product. So the salesman puts that in the hopper, or puts it in the pipeline. And the salesman knows that if he keeps doing this consistently, he's going to fill up that pipeline with people that are thinking about what he has to offer. And if he's offered a good product at a fair price that is competitive with any others that might be alternatives to what he has to offer, he knows that sooner or later there's going to be sales made that come out the other end of the pipe. And that's what we want. We want to be putting deals into the pipeline. And the real pipeline is our consciousness. And if we do that, we know that our hope is going to turn into fruition. If we have a problem to solve, we may not know the correct solution, but if we claim our right to reflect the intelligence of God, and we don't input a sense of personal ego or any kind of bias, like we know everything, so we know the solution, and we can't be like I was when I was a little boy. I thought I had a problem. I was 3 or 4 or 5 years old. And I went to my mother. My dad was working. And I told her I had a problem. And would she help me? And she says, well, go to God. He got a lot more solutions than I do. And I said, Mom, this is too little for God. I only wanted to take big things to Him. Little stuff I wanted to be done quick. And she was my problem solver, I thought. Well, she told me that she wasn't. She said, I got to learn to go to God first and last and only. Well, remember what Isaiah said. Precept upon precept. Precept upon precept. Line upon line. Line upon line. Here a little, there a little. If we know anything about compounding, Einstein called that the eighth wonder of the world. It assumes that you learned something today that you did not know, and you add it to what you already knew the previous day. If you do that, you're building a foundation that is getting wider and deeper and stronger. And if you do that, you're going to be able to build a structure of spiritual understanding that's going to be of great value. Because you can draw on that reserve when you need it. A thought will pop out without even thinking about it or asking for it. It'll just come to you. That will be an immediate result, immediate opposite to what a problem is. In other words, a solution. So the more we study, the more we build up our reserve where we have immediate answers that will come to us. And the easiest way to do that is to study the textbook of Christian Science entitled Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy. And to study it from the very beginning, the very first page, which is the title page, and reading those three quotes that I mentioned a little bit ago, letting those sink in, and study it from there all the way to the end of page 700. The last 101 pages from 600 to 700 are testimonies from 85 people, all of which have been verified, and they gave a testimony on 486 healings that they had. And they all came about the same way, studying the textbook from beginning to end. They were very curious in the beginning because they had problems and they couldn't solve it through the resources that they knew about. So they were curious, what is this thing called Christian Science? And as they read more and more and studied it and tore the sentences apart, so they really looked at the tiny little elements and the bigger elements and how they fit together and the sequence and the way things are related, then they got more and more confidence that there's something here that I really got to be serious about. So they would end up reading the text for book from beginning to end. Now, these were recorded over 100 years ago when they didn't have recording devices. Now we have recording devices. In fact, most people carry a cell phone with them that they can record things on. Other people, like myself, prefer a computer with recording equipment. But it's highly recommended that when you study the textbook from beginning to end, that you record every single thing you read in your own voice. And after you get done reading a particular key point, go back and put it in your own words and record that. So when you get done at the end of page 700, you basically have rewritten the textbook in your own words. Then you've done what a speaker, well-known guy that was an expert on the topic, he used to repeat everything twice so that the listener in the audience heard it three times. And when I asked him why he repeated everything, that was at the first break of the first day, he said, because people don't remember it if it's only said once. If it's said twice, they remember it better. Say it three times, better. He said, but if you really want to remember it, you have to make it your own. Tear it apart. Use your own words. And you have to practice it. You have to practice it over and over and over. Like Ashkenazi, one of the greatest pianists of all time, said when they asked him in a concert how he could perform with such perfection, he said, "I practice, practice, practice until the music plays me." He had to get himself totally out of the picture. That's what we have to do when we study science and health. And another book we should do the same thing with is called Your Divinity Revealed. We should study the whole thing from beginning to end, but then when we get done, we should go back to chapter 4, because chapter 4 through 10 are on the seven synonymous terms for God. As mentioned, they are mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. You have to really understand what those words mean, and they've got about 800 words in there that describe them, somewhere around 50 to 100 words that describe each one of the seven words. You cannot understand them unless you study what all the other words are that define it. And all this information is taken from the textbook. It's how Mary Baker Eddy used the different words to describe mind, spirit, soul, and so forth. Record everything that you read and put everything that you read in your own words. And when you get done at the end of the book, you go back to the beginning and do it again. And again, and again, for the rest of your time on planet Earth. You should always be reading it from beginning to end. Doesn't matter how long you spend on one key point or one page or one chapter. That's not a factor. What is the factor is that you are making your own whatever it is you're reading so that you internalize it and you can live it. And you need to live what you're reading. If you follow that procedure just mentioned, you will experience any healing that needs to be healed automatically. You don't have to do anything. It just happens. It happens because you have raised your level of thinking from curiosity to spiritual understanding. From being on the outside looking in to being on the inside expressing it outwardly in your every thought, speech, and action. The whole world bends their knee to your alignment with God. Nothing can block the progress. Because nothing has power to do it. The only real power is spiritual power, and that's in alignment with exactly what you're studying about. So that power is behind what you're doing. God helps those who help themselves. And God is infinite power. He is omnipotent, one, only, and all power. And that's the power you want. Hell has not a single ounce of anything because it's discord, it's disease, it is unreal. It's a lie. It has no power. It doesn't have any more power than 2 plus 3 equals 14. That's a mistake. It has no power. It can't be used for anything. It's unreal. You can't build a house if you're adding or multiplying like that. Do we need to be concerned about the election? Do we have to hope that whatever is working for the good of all mankind wins the election? Hope is not even entering into anything if hope means chance without foundation. If hope means you know what the outcome is going to be because you have spiritual understanding about how God operates. God operates for the benefit of all who align themselves with God. That's how God operates. And God is no respecter of person. It's that the laws come to fruition for those who are aligning with the laws. There's not a person involved. Not you. And God is not a person. Jesus is not God. Jesus was a person, but he's not God. He told the world. When the Pharisees asked him about the greatest commandment, they said, "Good master, tell us, what is the greatest commandment of all?" He said, "Why call me good? There is only one good, and that is God." I mean, he told them straight out, "I'm not God. I'm not good." He could have added one more sentence that said, "I'm only reflecting the goodness of God in anything that I accomplish. I'm only reflecting the goodness of God." But he didn't do it. He let us guess about it for 1,000 years. Mary Baker Eddy figured it out, though. Physicists, the smartest guys on earth, some of them spent their life trying to figure out what made the universe tick. Einstein spent a goodly part of his adult life chasing that rainbow. So did Tesla, Nikola Tesla. Einstein, after studying Christian Science, attending the church, going into the reading room for quiet study time and so forth, he said, "Blessed art thou, because all that is in this book." He was referring to Mary Baker Eddy as thou, even capitalized it with a capital T. And all that is, that means everything that has any reality to it at all is explained in the textbook. I mean, how can you be more clear than that? All that is in this book. He also said, imagine a woman discovered this 80 years ago. Now, she discovered it in 1866, so I presume if he was accurate in saying 80, he meant 80 and not 79 or 81 or whatever. So if he did, that would have been 1946 that he made that statement, because that'd be 80 years from 1866. And a woman couldn't hold title to property, couldn't vote, didn't have hardly any privileges to live her life the way she would like to do it, as a man would be able to do. So he really said, well, you know, women are nothing. And yet one of them discovered what I've been chasing for my whole life. His friend, Dr. Underwood, was on the Atomic Energy Commission. And everybody on that commission, they were trying to figure out how to do an atom bomb. really a smart thing to do, to destroy civilization. It never occurred to them they might be destroying themselves. So anyway, his friend Dr. Underwood was on the commission, and everyone there passed on except him from radiation. And Einstein had apparently figured out what they were planning to do, and he didn't want any part of it, I guess. I haven't seen anything in writing about that, but he was not on the commission, and he was considered one of the greatest thinkers of the time. And Dr. Underwood, when he asked him, well, how did you survive this? Dr. Underwood told him that he was a student of the works of Mary Baker Eddy. So Einstein got really serious about it and made those kind of comments after he had been studying it a while. Hope, if it's defined to be spiritual understanding, in other words, if it's defined to be expectation based on spiritual understanding that we know to be founded on divine principle, which is the truth about God and the truth about God's manifestation, which is man, which is you and me, then we're talking about something really valid. We have to make sure that we always express gratitude. I'm very grateful for everyone that I learned anything from to elevate my understanding about God and man and the relationship, about how to live life. And I'm striving. I'm sure not walking on water, but I'm striving. And I'm grateful for any little morsel that I learn from anyone. And that certainly includes the Bible characters, Mary Baker Eddy, people that are really expert in Christian Science, where they've demonstrated overcoming everything that was confronting them. We have several that overcame death, healed others of overcoming death. And in the case of Bicknell Young, he overcame it for himself. He was drowned. We have the information on the website. The beauty of Christian Science is that it is an open door with an absolute unlimited dimension. It's like God. It's infinite. There's no end to it, because it's a study of God, who is infinite. It's a study of God's manifestation, which reflects the infinitude of God. It's a beautiful thing to see how people can open up their thought to this taste of infinity. We also want to declare that any truth that has been discovered and stated in the work that you're doing, when you're recording or whatever you're doing, that you're grateful for it, and that it's always true. It can't be diluted, can't be deflected, can't be stopped, can't be reversed, can't be interfered with in any way, because it's true. And truth cannot be defeated by anything unlike truth, because truth is real and anything unlike truth is unreal. And unreality can't defeat anything. It can't even get a foot in our consciousness without our approval. So don't give it any. Don't give it a helping hand. God is omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent, and omniaction. God is spirit. The only real substance. Therefore, when we get closer to spirit, we're getting closer to God. And vice versa. I'm so grateful for the textbook of Christian Science. It gives us the foundation to get on the right track. And if we pursue it consistently, as was suggested in this recording, along those lines, we open all doors to the future of reality and close all doors so that we don't let an element of unreality establish any doubt in what we're doing. God is all in all. Thank you, dear Father, Mother, God. Amen.